AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. That was a solid kick right in the rear to wrap up a four-day trading week. Wow. But as tough as it was for the grain and the oilseed markets, livestock futures shot to the upside. All right, let's settle down, shake off the debris, and let's figure out what this all might mean for the markets over the next few weeks.
Live from Friday of 13 degrees via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Mark Welch, extension economist at Texas A&M University, a new voice for us here on AgriTalk. Yeah. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Wow, what a day, huh? That was something to watch, and what an introduction for a new voice to AgriTalk.
Yeah,
Mark Welch on a day when we've got these markets just got hammered, dude. Just got hammered.
Well, and I need to, I tell you what, I'm gonna keep myself from having to wear out this button and just play this once.
Good idea.
For all the grain markets right now. Let's get it out of the way, you know, because it's.
But do you have some happy
today's
music
market
for
action
like the feeder
in
cattle?
Song. Do I have music for feeder cattle? Do I have music for feeder cattle? Come on, buddy. Come on,
man. What are you thinking? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, well, good grief.
All of this just seems a little bit familiar because I don't know if you've noticed, you know, there are those who have talked about getting a little bit nervous once the mainstream media, you know, your CNNs, your Fox Business type of channels start talking about commodity markets and how, you know, things may take a turn at that point.
Exactly. What was it? A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the coverage at CNBC, the coverage at Fox Business. All of a sudden, they were focused on what's going on in the grain markets, in the ag markets. I threw it out there as a warning sign, and you do that only because you've seen it so many times. Then you drift and you think, no, maybe that wasn't it. That couldn't be it. And then you get a couple of days up and then you get a big hammering like we got today. And I'm not saying that the rallies are over, Davis. I am not saying that. There is you just look at the shallow uptrends off of those lows from the August lows. And there's still room for these markets to correct further to the downside and still have an uptrend, an overall uptrend in place. We need to keep that in mind. But the warnings on this one, you hate to say that they were right there for everybody to see, but they were kind of right there for everybody to see. In the headline news on last Monday on Martin Luther King Jr. Day on this Monday, I used it to talk about the overbought, oversold indicators and how corn and soybeans were so overbought and in need of a downside correction. And then you throw on top of that how the grain rallies had gone mainstream and the coverage of it the week before. What is it? When patterns start to repeat, you better pay attention or whatever the heck it is. And
somebody
sometimes
said that once.
Yeah, something like that. And sometimes you've got to remember, you know, we've all seen it before. We've all seen it before. Now, it would not surprise me a bit if we come back in here early next week and the market decides, you know what? We kind of forgot what our job was to do. And we still have to slow down demand. Would not surprise me a bit. So
I just figured that traders wanted me to sing again. And I guess I did fail to specify. I mean, I don't sing when it's coming back down. It's only on the way up when we hit these markers.
That's right. That's right.
I should probably have clarified that. This may and all be my fault.
We did hang on for a $5 plus close in that March and May corn contract, though. So we
that we
right.
did, sir. We did.
Yes. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip technical selling and long liquidation overwhelmed all the grain markets in afternoon trade. March soft red wheat futures, however, could not post a full test of support at the January 11 low at 628 and three quarters. While there has been some relief from dry conditions in Argentina, Ukraine, and Russia, these major markets are still looking for ways to artificially slow demand. Russian Ag Ministry comments earlier this week that wheat and food price strength, quote, has been tamed, sent a message to wheat traders that export demand has stalled out. Some market watchers are warning that message may have been sent a bit too early. Export sales of wheat in the weekend of January 14 were at the low end of trade expectations, 330,000 metric tons. July hard red wheat, 21 and three quarter cents lower, 616 and three quarters. July soft red plunged, 23 and three quarter cents, 624. September spring wheat, 21 and three quarter cents lower, 631. Chip.
Yeah, and on the week, July SRW wheat down 33 and three quarters, July HRW down 28 and three quarters, and September spring wheat was down 28 cents. So a little bit of spread movement there, but not much.
Aggressive profit-taking in corn in the form of long liquidation turned into chart-based selling, and the first close below the bottom of the July 13 upside price gap. March corn futures are now about 40 cents below the January high and 20 cents above the January low. Export sales in the weekend of January 14 totaled more than 1.4 million metric tons. That easily topped pre-report trade expectations. Mexico topped the list of buyers, with Japan, Colombia, Nicaragua, and Morocco also noted buyers. The sales total included 46,000 metric tons of corn sold to Japan for delivery in the 21-22 marketing year. USDA this morning also announced the sale of 123,000 metric tons of sorghum for delivery to China, with the tally split between old and new crop shipments. March corn futures 23 and three quarter cents lower, $5.5. May corn was hammered, 23 and a quarter cents lower, 503. December corn closed at 430 and a quarter, down 18 and one half on the day, pal.
Yeah, Japan showing up, doing a little value buying in the new crop. March corn on the week down 31 cents. December corn on the week down 29 and three quarters.
Old and new crop soybean sales blew through trade expectations. Old crop sales of more than 1.8 million metric tons led by China, unknown destinations, the Netherlands, Mexico, Pakistan, and Spain. New crop bean sales of 831,000 metric tons featured sales to unknown destinations, China and Spain. USDA this morning also announced the sale of 136,000 metric tons of beans for delivery to China in the current marketing year. And none of that demand provided support for bean prices. Heavy profit-taking hammered bean prices, which turned into chart-based selling to send March bean prices about $1.30 below the January highs. Wow. Just a nickel to go to get to the month's low. March bean futures 58 and one half cents lower at 13.11 and three quarters. May beans off 57 cents, 13.11 and three quarters. November bean futures 11.12, down 56 and one half on the day, Chip.
Yeah, get this. On the week, on a four-day work week for the grain markets, March soybeans were down $1.05.
Wow.
$1.05. November soybean futures off 85 and three quarter cents. So some movement on the spread between the old and the new crop there, going in the wrong direction based on the amount of demand that we've got in this market. The bear spread worked big time in a downtrending market for the soybeans today. Really kind of amazing. Okay, buddy, when we come back, we'll get to the cotton and the livestock closes, and then it's time for a conversation with a new voice here on AgriTalk, Mark Welch, ag economist down at Texas A&M University. He's coming up next, right here on AgriTalk. When making corn herbicide applications, some growers choose to only apply partial rates rather than applying the full rate indicated on the label. Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here to tell us what the harm is in using that approach.
Yeah, this is really important. While applying partial rates may seem like a good way to cut costs, the truth is that it can significantly damage your ROI in the long run. This is because you're applying lower doses of herbicides that allow plants to withstand the application and survive, which can kickstart the process for tolerance and eventual resistance with these weed biotypes. The worst thing with this is that resistance typically goes unnoticed until at least 30% of weeds in the field are resistant, so it can persist and spread.
That's got to have an impact on corn growth, which eventually has an impact on yield, right?
Yeah, in addition to eventual resistance, cutting your corn herbicide rate can lead to more weed outbreaks, crop competition with weeds for nutrients like water and nitrogen, and ultimately decreased yield. Using full herbicide rates will not only be more effective in removing problem weeds, but it's also going to prevent weeds from developing new forms of resistance to that herbicide.
Okay, so which corn herbicide will give growers the best pre- and post-emergent coverage?
Yeah, Acuron corn herbicide has unmatched weed control. Better weed control equals higher yield potential. When used in a pre-emergent application at full label rates, Acuron lets you discover the extra bushels no other herbicide can, 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other corn herbicide.
Excellent, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com. Take it from me, D-A-V-I-S.
Yes. Just welcome back to AgriTalk. This is C-H-I-P, Flory. Glad that you could join us today. We're going to be having a conversation here real quickly with Mark Welch from Texas A&M. Before we do that, though, Davis, let's go ahead and get that cotton and livestock news in here.
Yes, sir. Well, old crop cotton sales in the weekend of January 14 totaled just over 292,000 running bales, with new crop sales of 39,500. Even with a hefty sell-off, March cotton posted an inside trading day with a high range open and a low range close. March cotton 101 points lower at 81.56, and D's cotton sank 57 points to 78.47.5. Man, they even got cotton. You know, they got cotton too.
You know, but you know, yeah, down 101 points in the March contract, and it's an inside day. It barely looks like a blip in that long-term rally that's going on in cotton, Davis. It's very impressive. On the week, March cotton was up just 86 points. It was up 86 points on the week.
The cattle complex pulled support from the sharp sell-off in feed prices and beef export sales of 24,500 metric tons. February live cattle, 262.5 higher, 116.72.5. April cattle jumped 257.5 to 122.52.5. March feeder cattle romped $5 higher, 144.15. Yeah. Baby, there's some good news for you.
That was a big move. That was a big, big move. And even before the day, the markets were working on gains for the week, because April live cattle on the week up $4.32.5. March feeder cattle on the week up $8.32.5.
Short covering and super strong export sales of 45,200 metric tons pushed hog prices sharply higher. What the heck? February lean hogs strutted 182.5 higher to 69.92.5. April hogs up 2.25, 76.15. Like those Feb hogs, though.
I do. And the April lean hogs on the week were up $3.50. That, oh, wow. Right. Yeah, that was a big move, up $3.50. The biggest percentage gainer of the markets that we follow on the week, March feeder cattle up 6.13%. Wow. When we look for the decliners, the biggest decliner, March soybeans down 7.41%. That's a big move. All right, let's get to it. Mark Welch is a Extension Ag Economist at Texas A&M University, joins us for the first time here on AgriTalk. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, doing good. Well, I know when to walk into a room, don't I? Yeah,
right. Everybody's everybody's dead silent, looking at the economist that's walking into the room.
Appreciate that. We'll see how this goes. Good to be with you today. Thank you.
I'm glad that you're here. And you know what? I'm going to give a shout out to Chris Barron. He's the one that turned me on to you and said, "Listen, you got to get Mark on the show. He's really good." So, thanks to Chris.
Well, you bet. Yep. Appreciate work with Chris on a couple other programs and appreciate that recommendation.
You bet. What happened today? Was it, you know, we've been talking about just the profit taking, the long liquidation, the downside correction. Is that basically what we're talking about, Mark?
You know, I think you would have to pretty well attribute it to those kinds of things on the momentum that we saw once things kind of started getting away from us today. Profit taking, you know, the technical retracement, you know, indicators and trading tools, you know, kicking in. I think that's going to be the biggest explanation for what we saw. Because when you think of the where our prices have rallied to and looking at, you know, the corn and soybeans specifically, is there fundamental support for what prices have done? And I think absolutely. And that was not undone overnight. We still have those fundamentals, that support of the corn prices up where we've been trading here recently. And that doesn't mean there's not going to be, you know, some up and down around this. But we have some stock levels in these major crops that are at some of the lowest levels we've seen since 2012 and 2013. And so when you see that, it's certainly not unexpected to see the price rally that we've seen. And I don't think the conditions are such that we can undo all that or that's all unraveled here on today's trade. I think the market will regroup and reset. But there's fundamental reasons why we're at where we're at.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I love your line there that the fundamental support was not undone overnight. We've still got those tight stocks, and we've had a few export sales announcements, daily export sales announcements from USDA this week for soybeans in particular is what I'm talking about. But corn, sorghum, also getting some sales. Following the January 12 reports, Mark, it looked to me like the directive was pretty clear. The directive was to the corn market, to the bean market, to slow down demand. And it tried for a couple of days, but ever since then, the markets haven't been acting like they're trying to slow down usage.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, of course, over a little longer period of time. But yeah, in today's export reports for corn were so interesting that, you know, of course, China's been driving this train for a long time, and they've kind of slowed down a little bit. And now we saw, you know, Mexico and Japan stepping back up, you know, our traditionally biggest and best customers for U.S. corn. And so they were stepping up to the plate.
Yes.
So I think that's a good, solid message that came from the export sales. But with the price action that we're seeing, there's some demand rationing. Where's that going to play out? But then you talked about kind of across the complex of crop markets today. Yeah. You know, that we're setting up that battle for all these crops need more acres next year. We need more wheat. We need more sorghum. And then let's get the big guys. You know, we need corn and soybeans. We need cotton. And so I think that that stage is really just getting set. Or how we're going to divvy those acres up as we head into 2021.
Yep, definitely. I want to talk about that some more as we go on here, Mark. But first, talk specifically about the wheat market. And you went through a little bit of how the corn market got to where we're at now. How did the wheat market get to where it was?
You know, wheat, I think, has a very interesting story in and of itself. It has so many similarities just going higher with the other grains. But I think there are some particular aspects of wheat that we kind of need to keep in mind. And first of all, the difference between trading a feed grain and a food grain. And when we talk about countries that are protecting domestic food supplies, domestic food inflation, domestic food security, wheat is one of those commodities more likely to be impacted by domestic policies that would either restrict exports or maintain domestic supplies. And of course, I think it's what we're seeing play out. And so even though there's some dry weather in the southern high plains, there's concerns about southern Russia and the eastern part of Ukraine, the dry crop going in. You know, that Black Sea region, that's where most of our exports have come the last few years. And if those nations are concerned about, again, things we were just talking about, domestic food security, domestic food inflation, and they put in policies that would restrict the flow of exports from what have become the largest exporters in the world, that just tightens up a production situation and then just takes it a little bit tighter. Again, when we're talking about a food grain, those kind of policies, I think, are more likely to be implemented and have those kind of impacts. That tightening things up, that is the concern across the wheat board.
Exactly. Yeah, good comments there. But I was, even with what's going on of the Black Sea region, Mark, I was thinking that maybe we would see some of that demand slide into the U.S. But then you got to look at how the balance is working out between Australian wheat shipments that normally go into China. With that, I won't call it what I was thinking of call it, but we've got a tiff going on between China and Australia. Is Australia picking up some of that business?
You know, I haven't gotten strong indicators of whether that's coming back or not. Certainly, Australia is looking at a larger crop this year with, you know, better growing conditions. And I think it could be, you know, much like we saw in, you know, with the tariff situation, the challenges that we had with China the last few years. When one market kind of gets shut off and so a buyer goes somewhere else, it doesn't mean that the whole trade is going to collapse, but we kind of just move the pieces around the chessboard. And and so maybe we, you know, redirect from one area to another.
Yep.
Certainly,
yep.
You know, U.S. wheat exports to China have picked up. But again, the difference in situations domestically with wheat is that even though our stocks are getting a little bit tighter and there's talk about, you know, short crop, global supplies of wheat have never been larger. Our stocks to use, that carryover number from the end of the marketing year on May 31st, is still projected at an all-time record high going into concerns over perhaps somewhat of a smaller crop in 2021. So we're starting out at a much stronger fundamental position for wheat than we are compared to corn and soybeans. But again, I think the food grain factors play larger in that particular market. So, you know, wheat doesn't have the tight fundamentals that we see across some of the other grains.
Okay. All right, making notes here real quick. Oh, Mark, we're off to a great start here. When we come back, I want to go back to one of the topics that you brought up. That's acres. And be thinking about this during this break. How much should we be concerned about the U.S. HRW crop here, the condition of that crop? Is it a big concern for you? It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, Biden to freeze oil and coal leasing on federal land. We talked about that a little bit this morning. That's about 10% of total oil supplies. Biden warns the COVID deaths will top 500,000 next month. And he also tempers the vaccination hopes there a little bit. AgroConsult has trimmed the Brazilian soybean crop projection by 800,000 metric tons to 132.4 million metric tons. Sovicon raises the 2021 Russian wheat crop projection from 76.8 to 77.7 million metric tons. There's a new strain of ASF circulating in China. And South Korean poultry culls near 20 million birds. Give Pro Farmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
You know, the song Crazy Barge probably wouldn't have gone as well. I don't feel like.
It's tough to take them off the rails.
It really is. You'd have to rewrite like all the words, like
not just train.
I'm not sure Ozzy was
barge.
Yeah,
it wouldn't make that much sense anymore.
Versed enough in nautical terminology to do it.
You know what you're setting yourself up for.
What's that? What's that, Chip?
We may be looking for another Michelson miracle coming out here.
A remake of a remix. Is that what you're proposing?
I want a Michelson mashup of the mashup. That's what I'm looking for. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're talking with Mark Welch from Texas A&M today. Enjoying the conversation. But before we get back to it, let's recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July HRW wheat was 21¾ cents lower, 616¾. July soft red plunged 23¾ cents to 624. March corn futures 23¾ cents lower, $5.5. May corn hammered 23¼ cents lower to 503. March soybean futures 58½ cents lower, 13.11¾. May beans dropped 57 cents to 13.11¾. March cotton 101 points lower, 81.56. February live cattle 262½ higher, 116.72½. March feeder cattle up $5, 144.15. Wow. February lean hogs 182½ higher at 69.92½. Chip, how about some levity? Just really quick. Just a little levity.
Hey, Grandma! Can I have some nonsense?
Not until you finish your agri-talk.
Agri-talk!
There's your quick market recap, Chip. Now back to you.
Good girl, Grandma. She's making sure we get everything that we need, our daily dose of agri-talk in there first.
Yes. Agri-talk, then the nonsense. First agri-talk,
then the nonsense. Oh, we got to keep
right. That
straight. Don't let that priority list get mixed up. Mark Welch is an extension economist at Texas A&M University. He's our guest today. Mark, you look at the drought monitor map, you look at the rainfall maps and everything, and you see how dry it is across HRW country. The condition index that updates that we get periodically during the winter months sure don't indicate that we're looking at great crop conditions in HRW country. How concerned should we be about this?
You know, it certainly is a concern for the western area of that production area for hard red winter wheat. And you mentioned the drought map. You go down, western Kansas, eastern Colorado, right down the western half of the Texas Panhandle. It's tough. You know, there's some extreme drought conditions in that part of the world. But the Texas Panhandle, you get off the Cap Rock and kind of roll into the rolling plains and central Texas, and you move across parts of Oklahoma and into southern Kansas. According to the maps and the condition ratings, things are a little better out there. And we'll get some updates on that next Tuesday. The state stories that USDA puts out kind of replace the weekly crop reports during the winter. But from November to December, crop condition ratings in Kansas got better. I would not be surprised to see them get a little bit better again when we get those reports out next week. Again, not a great crop, but with wheat, if you can just keep it alive as we get through into February and start waking that crop up in March, breaking dormancy, then we get a better handle on it. But I think the moisture that we've had a good snow across a good bit of Texas last week, which was very unusual, but very welcome moisture. So I think it certainly, bought us time in some concerns that we had for production on hard red winter wheat. But things look better, standing here today than they did a month ago. And I think that's positive for the production prospects. And for producers trying to do something with the pricing opportunities that we have, maybe you have a little more confidence of doing something, given that, the production looks a little better right now.
Right. When we talk about divvying up acres, Mark, I love it when there's a battle for some of those acres. And, of course, the more players that you have in the battle, the more exciting it can get. Kind of been wondering if spring wheat was going to engage in the acreage battle this year and take some of those acres in North Dakota and South Dakota away from corn and soybeans. Any chance of that happening?
I do find it just fascinating that you talk about the Northern Plains and then also down to the Southeast and the Delta. That, we're talking about acreage competition among corn and soybeans and wheat.
Yeah.
Throw cotton in the mix.
Yes.
And then, sorghum out in western Kansas and the Texas Panhandle said, hey, don't forget about us. We've got a dollar premium on the corn market. Maybe you ought to take a look at sorghum. And so I think we will see, again, a real battle for those. And of course, a producer's production history and the agronomic benefits of crop rotations. Those are all are going to play into it. But if you look at the difficult situation we had getting crops planted the last two springs here in the U.S., our major crops, we're down about 12 million acres from where we could bounce back to with an ideal spring. And so how are we going to divvy up those 12 million acres when winter wheat's already taken 1.5 million? I think grain sorghum is going to step up and say, we want one or two. Cotton, it's having trouble probably keeping up. It's had a rally, but not in excess of what the corn and soybean markets have done. Right. Our cotton specialist indicates he thinks cotton will stay about the same. So, you know, corn and beans fighting over 8 or 10 million acres, is that enough? And that how we allocate those, I think, has a strong opening salvo for price direction here over this next 6 weeks or so until we get some numbers coming out of estimates around what folks are going to do.
Yeah. Timeline on that, Mark. You mentioned the next 6 weeks, but realistically, aren't most producers going to be making a decision on that within the month, something like that?
Right. I think that will be the case. And, you know, when I say, you know, 6 weeks, that's when we'll start to see the reports related to, you know, independent firms not only surveying their customers, but, of course, you know, USDA with their National Planting Intention Survey that they'll be conducting in the latter part of February or the first part of March. Won't come out until, you know, the very end of March when they'll report those results. The USDA Outlook Conference, you know, coming up in a few weeks, that'll kind of have a nice number for us to throw up against the wall and see if it sticks. So we'll have some numbers starting to come out, but it's hard to carve out a much larger corn number with the rally that we've had in soybeans. 91 million acres of corn. Can we go to 92 or 3? Yeah. 94, 95. Man, that seems really, you know, hard to – how are we going to wrest those away? But those are the kind of acres we would need to really turn the supply situation around. So I think it is going to be a very interesting challenge moving forward.
Hey, Mark, give me the details on how that sorghum market is trading down there compared to corn again. What kind of a premium did you say sorghum's carrying?
Yeah, just $1 a bushel.
Just.
Incredible. Just incredible. And we're seeing those numbers, of course, all across the western high plains there in sorghum country. With the strong export demand that we're seeing from China and really, you know, talk about tight stocks in corn and beans, well, sorghum is right along there with them, very tight supply situation. And so I think that's given us a great deal of price support. So sorghum has had the rally that the corn market has had. You know, it'll tag right along. It's the dominant market for feed grain, so sorghum will follow along with corn. But then in addition to that, the premium that has magnified through the fall and here this winter for grain sorghum is just a tremendous marketing opportunity for our sorghum folks.
That premium has got to be driven by export demand alone, right?
Right. And we're looking at overall demand for grain sorghum. It really hasn't changed the last two or three years. But what we do when exports pick up, we take it away from feed and fuel.
Yep.
And so that's what's happening right now. The higher use market is just rounding up every bushel it can find. And so that sorghum's going to the port and it's going to China.
Okay. So what do we do about all this? Let's start with wheat. I got a feeling you really emphasize the big global wheat stocks that we're expected to have at the end of the marketing year. It's probably got you interested in doing some risk management.
Well, you bet. And again, with wheat, and we do watch, you know, what happens here in the U.S. and our domestic, you know, production concerns and conditions. But, you know, the U.S., we only supply 6 to 8% of the world's wheat. And so we're going to be driven by factors in other places. And so, yes, there is some real concern. Some of the major producing areas, you know, Europe crop was down last year. There's some concern about China right now. And they're, of course, they're importing more wheat. But again, globally, we're not in a tight stocks situation when it comes to wheat like we are with corn and beans. And wheat is notorious for surviving some very harsh conditions and, you know, and still coming on and making a crop. Yes, with the rallies that we've seen, I'm one of those kind of sell into the rallies. Everybody's kind of got their own approach and strategies. If you're one that wants to wait and see the top and sell on the way down, that's fine.
Yep.
The concern is when we're just trying to pick the top. And right. And that's when, you know, emotions and a lot of other things start driving that marketing decision. And so I'm certainly an advocate of incorporating some tools in your marketing decision-making process that try to remove some of that emotion out of it. And I think there's some tools that we can do to do that. But okay. Absolutely, with the rally that we've seen, don't let it get away.
Don't let it get away. Only about 30 seconds left here. Have you been telling or asking guys to go ahead and sell into the rally in corn too?
Instead of trying to, you know, pick a top of the market,
yep.
Every single day we need to ask ourselves, is today's price,
yes.
Is that good enough on some of it, just some
yeah.
level of production? Would I do something with some of it at this price? And if it goes higher, great. I've got more to sell. If it goes down, you know what? I'm glad I got something done from that deal.
Absolutely. Great stuff, Mark. Thank you so much for making time for us. We'll do it again if it's okay with you.
Great to be with you. Sure enjoyed it.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much. That is Mark Welch. He is an extension economist at Texas A&M University. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up here in just a moment.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
And I know.
My record always gets stuck on this spot, too. That's weird.
Not in the groove.
Yeah, you got to hit the table, Joe. Hit the table.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Wow. That's fantastic. What a debut by Mark. We're going to have him back on.
He was great.
That's for sure. Yeah.
You know, there are certain words that a Southerner uses.
Yeah.
And one of them stuck out to me. And this has nothing to do with anything. It occurred to me. I'm a word freak, a word nerd. He used the word rested. But with a W, you know, not like rested, like I'm going to take a nap, like rested, like acres pulled away in a
right.
dramatic, violent fashion. Acres rested away.
Yep.
Just in that
yep.
word alone, what a word picture.
Yep. Yep. I love it. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Good mm-hmm. stuff. Hey, the Cattle on Feed report was out this afternoon.
Yeah.
And we have some details on that for you right now. The total number of cattle on feed on January 1 came in at 100.1% of year-ago levels. The trade expected 99.4%. Placed in December, 100.8% of year-ago. The trade expected 97%.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you're looking for, you know, you've got that bit of a spread between the trade expectations and the actual on the total number of cattle on feed. A lot of that is coming from the bigger than expected placements because marketings were also a touch bigger than expected. The expectations on marketings in December, 100.6% of year ago, got a 101% of year ago. Okay. So. It does, you know, the placement number was a little heavy. That might be a touch negative.
Sounds like a big miss.
Nah.
No?
Placements is a wild card number. It's got to miss bigger than that before it really has too much of an impact. You got to look at the total number of cattle on feed on January 1. It's at 100.1% versus 99.4%. That's a 0.7% miss. Yeah, but in this environment, I don't know if that's going to be enough to weigh on that market too much or not. I don't think
okay.
it will.
Okay.
Box beef demand next week is going to be more important than these numbers is what I would say to that.
Very good.
So, okay. Monday afternoon, we're going to have Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing on the show. And Sam was good enough to tag us in quick analysis
yeah.
of the Commitment of Traders report that was out here this afternoon. We've got the funds still long about 336,000 contracts of corn. That's still a really big long position, even after today. Not after today, because this is as of January 19th. There was heavy long liquidation in the market today is what it looked like. on the soybean side of things, long about 137, 138,000 contracts of soybeans. Sam says that the guess going home was that beans would be sub 100K. So a little bit of a shakeup there, that they're still as long as they are or were as of January 19th. And then on Chicago wheat, looking at, you know what? I don't know if that's long or short. I don't have a comment on that, if it's long or short, about 14,000 Chicago wheat. I'm guessing long. I'm guessing that that's still on the long side, which, yeah, I'm guessing that that is still on the long side there. So we'll talk more with the fund positioning with Sam when he gets on the show on Monday. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook, Davis, for January 28th through February 1.
My local weatherman says there's a snowstorm coming. February 1's coming up that fast?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my 40s are just trickling away here. I'm in the waning days.
Is that right?
That's right.
Tell me more. Give me some detail. What do you got going?
George Washington's and I share a birthday.
Is that right?
And it will be the sunset to my four handle in life.
Oh,
that's right. It's absolutely true.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not
so you
true.
See why that Tim McGraw song just upsets me so much. At this point, if I get 30 years, the last half's going to be terrible, probably.
You're going to have to adjust your thoughts here, dude.
Not going to do it. Not going to do it.
Come on. Wow. Yeah, we are supposed to get some snow. And it's supposed to get to below zero tonight.
Oh, come on.
And then tomorrow afternoon, it's supposed to start snowing around here. But that January 28th through February 1st, we've got above normal temperatures expected over the entire middle of the country. I'm talking about from western Pennsylvania through Wyoming, Colorado.
Whoa.
A big chunk of the country is expected to see above normal temperatures. On the precipitation side, we're looking at below normal precipitation expected in the western production areas. North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. Mostly normal precipitation in the eastern belt. Illinois, Indiana, areas there expected to see above normal precipitation. So, I don't know. It's still looking pretty mild to me, Davis.
Sounds like Speedo weather to me. I'm going for it. At this point, you know, I've acclimatized to the cooler temperatures. I'm ready. I'm gonna dig them back out of the closet.
Well, or we could just leave them there. You know, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, we wouldn't have to. We wouldn't have to.
Okay, 8 to 14 day, January 30th through the 5th, the above normal temperatures stick around, and we get above normal precipitation across most of the Corn Belt. You got to get to the far western and southwest areas of the Corn Belt before you run into the normal and below normal precipitation. It was a short week for the markets, Davis.
It didn't seem like it, did it?
It really didn't. It really didn't. And when we look at some of the changes that the markets experienced this week, we're into the start of it. This is going to be a gut check time for grain marketers. No question about that. Let's come back on Monday, hit the reset button over the weekend,
okay,
do a recheck on what the market attitudes are to start next week. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you very much. Monday morning, Machinery Pete and Senator Chuck Grassley right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.